Science is interesting, and if you don't agree, you can fuck off.
All right, here we are. I am joined in studio with Adam Blackman. There you go. Your mic is on. You can
talk.
There
we go. Hi.
Hello. I wasn't there last week, so I didn't get a chance to talk to you. I haven't seen you in a couple of weeks.
Indeed.
How's it going?
Well, the controversy last week, goodness me.
Oh, I wasn't even going to touch on that.
Oh,
but
wow. Yeah.
I don't want to go down that road.
Let's see if the texts start rolling in now.
Yeah, hopefully you didn't, push everyone away from us.
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
So today we've got slightly less controversial topics. The first one is one that you were going to do last week and we didn't have time to do.
Indeed.
And it's about being left-handed and where it comes from.
So yes. Yeah.
Tell us
so
more.
This is kind of interesting. So for those of you in the know, August the 13th was International Left-Handers Day, which I didn't know.
No, neither.
They had. I've got anybody left-handed?
Nope.
No. I really wish no. It's one of those things. I think because it sets you apart from the others that, I don't know.
Well, they could have done
I used to think it was really cool to be left-handed, so I used to train my left hand. Obviously, that was terrible.
So you're
still
not,
a right-handed
You're not
person.
Ambidextrous then?
No, unfortunately not.
Okay. So the question then becomes why very few people, I guess, left-handed and the majority of people right-handed. And that's a very, very good question. You look back in history and it seems that, unfortunately, the left-handed, and of course the old name for left, the Latin for left-handed is sinister, of course, which has sort of come to English.
Yep.
With the pejorative meaning, I guess, or implication. But you look back in history and the right hand is often associated with good and the left hand often associated with not good. You go to Matthew in the Bible, for example, and you look at what's going to happen on the Day of Judgment, and everyone who's sitting on God's right hand is going to be okay and everyone who's sitting on God's left hand is for it. Okay.
Yeah.
And apparently back in the day when, you know, the Spanish Inquisition and all that sort of stuff and the Salem witch trials and everything, if you were left-handed, it probably wasn't the best thing to be because, you know, they'd burn you at the stake or crush you with a stone or, you know.
It's crazy,
All those nice things they used to do. And, you know, even this century, people have thought that, you know, kids shouldn't be allowed to write with their left hand. They should have it literally beaten out of them.
Yeah, it was really fought for quite a long time.
Quite bizarre, really, when you think back about it, with, you know, the benefit of hindsight and everything. But so where does this preference come from is the question. And obviously people have thought that it came from the brain. And so there's recent work that's shown that that's probably now not the case, that it doesn't actually come from the brain. And so there were some workers in South Africa and Germany doing a joint project on this, and what they found was, okay, so apparently when you're in the womb, your brain and your spinal cord are not connected until about week 15 of pregnancy.
Okay.
But apparently your preference for left and right-handedness has already been made by that time.
When you say it has been made,
so I think sort of, you know, sucking your thumb and stuff like that. You've got a distinct preference by that time. So this sort of said to these people that this wasn't a brain thing. So what they had done, and goodness knows how they did this, but they looked at, I guess, babies in the sort of 8th to 12th week of pregnancy. And what they found was differences between the right hand and the left hand side of the spinal cord in gene expression. Okay, so gene expression is basically taking your information from DNA and converting it to proteins and stuff like that, and blah, 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 blah. So there were distinct differences between the right hand side and the left hand side of the spinal cord. And so that is now where they think that the preference for either right-handedness or left-handedness actually comes from. So it doesn't come from the brain, it comes from the right and left-hand side of the spinal cord. So these people think, anyway.
Okay.
So, you know, that's kind of an interesting study that they did. And again, you know, good. Studying babies in the womb can't be easy.
No, definitely not.
No.
But it's
probably.
Good question. Hell, I'm just the scientist. You know?
Not that kind. The answers.
Yeah, I know.
But it could probably help with, I mean, I don't know how big the stigma is still to these days, but it could probably help with that. Just saying, that's no brain abnormality. It's just,
Absolutely. And again, of course, what goes with perhaps left-handedness is also left and right-footedness, which is not really mentioned. you.
Do you think it's correlated? Like, do you?
Well,
think?
According to this, it looks to be because it's okay. the what controls left-handed and right-handed and left foot and right foot. This is what's going on in the spinal cord apparently. So it's the whole left side and the whole right side.
But because like I think about my brother who's like right-handed. But left-footed.
Okay. Yeah, that would be an interesting study to do. I don't know what the correlation is between being right-handed and right-footed. Mm. I'm certainly right-footed and right-handed.
Yeah, me too.
And you guys?
Look at us, just being so boring.
God, so...
so like everyone else.
So 50s white males. Yeah. I mean, God. But then again, the other question that needs to be answered is why the comparatively low number of left-handers.
Yeah, I was going to ask, why is there so few of them?
Okay, so again, a study done, and again, this is hand-wavy sort of stuff. This is people just sort of coming up with some possible explanation, but they think that it's all to do with sort of cooperativity and society, and so we're a very social animal, so to speak, and so the more social you are, the more cooperativity that you would have between the members of whatever species. And it's a lot easier if you're all sort of kind of the same-ish.
Okay.
So if you're all sort of right-handed, then people are thinking that that's a factor and, you know, that's sort of slowly evolved or whatever. And so we've slowly evolved to be predominantly of the one hand and that one hand tends to be right-handed. So that's the explanation anyway. I don't know. Mm. I don't know. I don't know what scientific evidence they've got about this, but, you know.
Right.
It kind of makes sense, I guess.
Mm. Could,
yeah.
All right. Yeah. moving on to the next topic, which is quite a big one as well.
Now,
and
this isn't going to be the cancer one, is it? Can we?
It is.
Can we save that one till next week?
Okay. Are you sure?
Yeah.
That's such a good read. Sure.
I know. No. I didn't really prepare up on that.
Okay. That's
so
all right.
I'm a bit naughty there.
The truth is out.
I know.
It's okay. We can talk about something else that I can relate to. Is contact lenses.
Are you a contact wearer? Are
I
you?
Am.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay. So am I.
And apparently,
I'm six eyes. Yeah.
But you've got glasses.
I've got glasses and I've got contacts. My sight is so bad.
Wait. Do you have both at the same time?
Oh yes, indeed.
Oh my God. I didn't even know that was possible.
Yeah,
I didn't know you could do both.
Hence the joke about six eyes. Yes.
Jesus. Yeah. I thought they counteract each other because, like, if I put my contacts,
my friend tried to do that in high school. She couldn't see in maths class, but it didn't work.
No, it doesn't. For me, it counteracts it. Yeah. I go back to not being able to see because I'm double corrected, so it just goes.
Yeah,
back,
no, I'm myopic about -11 or so, and then I'm astigmatic on top of that, so I've got to have the contacts for astigmatism.
Yeah, I'm only -2.5.
Myopic,
and I already can't see anything. So.
Yeah, so optically challenged as a bat, me. Anyway,
turns out people throw their contact lenses in the toilet, which I didn't know. I don't know how people can even think of doing that.
Yeah, I guess I didn't know that was a thing. So, well, this is certainly in the States anyway. So, some might not be the same
Americans.
Anywhere else in the world. But so, the story is the researchers at Arizona State University, and they did a survey basically of what people did with their contact lenses, which is not a survey that you'd really think you'd have to carry out.
No.
But the results are interesting because, as you say, 15% to 20%. Of people throw their contacts down the drain.
That's actually a pretty high percentage.
And you sort of think, well, you know, shit, they're just contact lenses. There's not really that many of them. Mm. But about 45 million people in the US wear contacts. And so that translates to about 14 billion lenses a year.
That's a lot of lenses.
That's a lot.
And that translates to 200,000 kilograms of plastic waste, essentially, or 200 tons, okay?
That's total. That's not...
That's total, yeah.
What's
yeah.
being thrown down the toilet.
Oh, no, that is what's being thrown down the... Yeah,
I was oh, my God.
Yes.
I
thought that was just so much.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Why? Why are they doing this?
I don't know.
Because it's easy, I guess.
I don't know.
I mean, when you get your contacts, aren't you told like the proper way to dispose of them? Like,
no.
I don't think anyone ever told me, but I think one thing that they do tell you is that you kind of want to have clean hands. So I'm assuming if you're doing that,
you're
flushing them in the toilet, doesn't mean you were on the toilet 2 seconds before you removed them and threw them in there. I don't know. It just doesn't seem very hygienic to me to begin with.
So, but that's what people do, and that is an awful lot of plastic waste. And plastic waste is a big, big thing right about now. In the last, gosh, I don't know, year, 2 years, 3 years, it really has come to the top of sort of people's concerns, I think. Yeah. Everyone's dead against plastic now, and obviously with, you know, getting rid of the plastic bags and stuff. So these guys decided to see what would happen to these contact lenses under the conditions that they would find themselves once they've been flushed. And so they looked at some of the polymers that are used in contact lenses, and they exposed them to the sort of microorganisms that they would find in those sorts of places. Because what eventually happens to this sort of stuff, it gets mulched onto farmland and stuff. You know, it ends up as sort of sludge, and then it gets sprayed on farmland as a fertilizer and stuff and everything. And so what they found was that these microorganisms that were present would indeed chew into certainly these discarded contact lenses, and they would then end up as being microplastic particles, which, again, the jury's still out on this whole microplastic thing. Yeah. I don't think there's enough sort of known as to whether microplastics are really nasty or not, but certainly... listening to some people, you think they are, you know, they're not the best. And yeah. So, you know, this could perhaps not be a good thing, I guess. So I guess the take-home message is possibly everybody, if you do wear disposable contacts, please don't throw them down the loo or put them down the sink.
I know. That'd be great.
So weird. I don't know why
anyone would
want to do it. I don't wear them, so.
Just would assume that you'd have a bin somewhere. Common sense. Just put it in there. Yeah.
But again, this all rises from the from our desire to wear disposable contacts. So I used to wear hard contact lenses, and you know.
How long could you keep those for?
If you slept in the overnight, it wouldn't be brilliant. So you'd take them out at the end of every day and stuff.
So what, you sleep in your disposable one?
No, I don't.
I think message out there. I think everyone who wears contacts will tell you that you don't want to sleep.
You definitely don't want them. Yes.
Otherwise, you will wake up with them glued to your eye, which is not exactly the best feeling.
Even worse, when I was wearing my hard ones, that actually got stuck.
Yeah,
to my eye. It actually literally, and I couldn't pull it off. I had to go to hospital, and they had
terrible. Oh, but when you say hard ones, is there? Because my ones are monthly ones.
Yeah, so are mine. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So I mean, rigid ones. Oh, not these ones. Yeah.
I also discovered that some people have daily ones, which I think is so much waste. A friend of mine had to order daily ones, and she ordered them for like 6 months, and she ended up with like boxes full of like boxes and boxes and boxes for wearing contacts.
Yeah, I don't understand that either. I've got to say, I think the monthly ones make a lot more sense. But maybe people could text in, you know.
What kind of contacts do you use, and how do you discard them? Let us know.
But you know, an interesting study, and I guess, you know, a possible environmental pollutant that really no one had really thought about.
Exactly.
Definitely not me.
Think about the poor fishy, you know.
I know. Looking after your poor fishy. Yeah, I know. That's true, though, actually. That's you have to think about
it. Poor Nemo is probably, like, choking on your contact lenses.
Oh, not
Nemo.
No.
Dory. Would it be worse if I said Dory?
Yes. All right, let's move on to our final topic of the day, which is using oxygen to kill infections. I think this topic is a little bit more technical. So
just a tad, but right, I'm going to try and sort of, you know, make it sort of hopefully understandable to everybody out there. So you may or may not have heard of MRSA, which is short for methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus.
Oh, yep.
Just Staphylococcus. Don't remember that, you know, just drop it in every conversation.
Staphylococcus, though, it's one of those infections that you can catch in the hospital.
Yes, indeed. Yes. Yep. So this is so-called superbug. And it's called that because it's essentially resistant to all of the antibiotics that we've got. And it, you know, it can be very, very nasty if you catch this. It's it can be a necrotizing disease. You know, it gets into your flesh and stuff. You know, it is called the flesh-eating bug.
Yeah.
So very, 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 very nasty. And the world is facing a crisis with respect to antibiotics because there's a lot of antibiotic resistance now coming. through essentially the overuse of antibiotics, and also the fact that people don't take their fully prescribed dose. They don't run until the end of their dose, and so therefore if you stop taking them before the end of your dose, then you can get antibiotic resistance from that. Okay, huh, some of them will live on. Okay,
how does that work?
So if they are sort of inherently resistant, then if you don't take the whole course of antibiotics and kill everything off, then the ones that survive will be strengthened against.
Oh yeah, okay, I see.
So you want to keep going until, you know, they're all dead, basically.
All right.
And so that's not a good thing. And now we've got this bug, which is essentially resistant to all of the antibiotics that we now know. Yeah. So we need either new, better antibiotics, and they don't come around every day. You know, they're very, very rarely made, and then once they are made, they're obviously going to go through the approval process, etc., etc. So that's a big, big deal, I guess, for drug companies and stuff. So alternative methods of killing bacteria, how can we do that? So there's these guys in Cincinnati, the University of Cincinnati, and they are going to use just plain old light to kill bugs.
Doesn't light and heat kill the yucky stuff?
It does, but with heat you've got to get up to 100 degrees, or, you know, there or thereabouts. And the old human body's not too crash hot at sort of 100 degrees. So that's out. But what these guys are doing is they're using light and what are called nanoparticles, photosensitizing nanoparticles, and we'll talk about them, to get oxygen to do the dirty work for them. Okay. Now we think of oxygen as being benign. Okay. It's the air around us is made up of about 21% oxygen. Mm. It's absolutely vital. If we run out of oxygen, we die. So it's absolutely necessary for life. And again, you'd think it's a nice, safe molecule. It is most of the time.
Okay.
Now this is where we get into a bit of chemistry.
Okay.
Because I love this stuff. So oxygen is a free radical. Mm-hmm. Now, what's a free radical, folks?
Please tell me.
The good stuff.
No, it's the bad stuff.
You don't want to try it, Eric. Just
see, you
I don't know.
See, okay, so you watch all these ads, or you see all these ads for sort of cosmetics and stuff like that, and they talk about all these damaging free radicals that age your skin and make you wrinkly and all of that stuff. And these free radicals are really, really bad, aren't they? And so you need all these neutralizing whatever to stop all these free radicals. That's bullshit, okay? Oxygen, sorry.
More controversy.
Yes, oh geez, there we go. Oxygen is a free radical because it's got unpaired electrons. That's what makes a free radical, okay? Single electrons that don't pair up with each other.
I vaguely remember high school chemistry.
Okay. Now, electrons, when they pair up with each other, they're normally good, okay? We are full of bonds in our bodies. The makeup of our bodies are made of molecules where all of the electrons are paired up, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, when they're not paired up, then they form what we call free radicals. But oxygen is a free radical most of the time, and it's nice and safe for us, okay?
Okay.
Now, oxygen can also be a non-free radical where those electrons actually pair up with each other. So they can go from the non-paired state, the free radical state, to the paired up state. And it's the paired up state that's really nasty.
Okay.
Because that's a thing called singlet oxygen. And singlet oxygen is seriously, seriously, seriously reactive, and it will react with anything, basically. So what they're going to do... I can see frown on your face. Okay, so how do you make singlet oxygen? Because if you can make singlet oxygen, you can treat anything with singlet oxygen because it'll just kill it, because it rips the shit out of anything, okay?
That's really handy.
Right. So how do you make it? You need to provide energy to turn triplet oxygen, what's called triple oxygen, the normal stuff in the air, triplet, into this nasty singlet stuff.
Okay.
And the way that you do that is you provide it with energy through light.
Mm-hmm.
And you use an intermediary, which is called a nanoparticle or a photosensitizer. Now, nanoparticles are tiny, tiny, tiny particles of the dimensions of nanometers, 1 by 10 to the minus 9 meters. And they're generally made of gold or silver.
Okay.
Okay. And they can absorb light of particular wavelengths and get excited. And then they can pass that excitation on to the oxygen molecule.
Okay.
So they act as an intermediary in converting light, essentially, to energy.
Okay.
And in the same way solar cells do, okay? Solar cells, they absorb light and they convert it to electricity, essentially.
Yep.
Similar sort of thing. And so these guys in Cincinnati have now made these nanoparticles that they can irradiate with red light, and that will convert triplet oxygen to singlet oxygen, and then it'll go ahead and just kill anything in its wake. And that's really kind of cool. So something as simple as oxygen we can sort of harness to make sure that, you know, we can get it to kill really, really nasty things. So this is sort of early days, and they're doing this in vitro rather, in vitro. Okay. That's the one. Yeah. So they're doing it
inside.
Yeah. And so they found that it doesn't sort of damage the skin or anything like that.
Okay.
So they can irradiate wounds and stuff and everything. And this hopefully might be one method with which we can combat these nasty bugs.
That's
so
great.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hope for the future.
Indeed.
Listener said, I thought they were using UV lights for MRSA.
Well, UV is also good because that will kill it, but that will also kill other things as well. So ultraviolet, so very, very, very short wavelength, which means very, very, very high energy. Yes, it'll do the trick, but ultraviolet is also what gives you melanoma and skin cancer.
So it's definitely not the number one option.
No, probably if you can somehow direct the stuff to the actual bug, or indeed they're talking about using this for melanoma as well because of the fact that it can selectively be activated. You can get it into the melanomas and it'll just kill them. So yes, you can use UV, but it's got its attendant risks as well. This looks to be pretty exciting. So we'll see what happens. More research will be necessary.
Yeah, and then I'm just going to read a couple of other texts. One says, thanks for reminding me to take my antibiotics. That's good.
Yes, indeed.
Yep.
Yes.
Just if you've started, just go all the way.
Keep going until you've got them all down.
And then one text was about the first topic that we touched on about left-handed people, and someone suggested that maybe not having to make tools for both hands back in the day when it took weeks or something would have helped one hand dominate.
Yes. Never thought of that. It's very sensible.
And then there's a little pun that says, very handy. Ha ha. Thanks, Mike, for that pun. That was great.
Very good.
All right. So thanks, Alan, for today. And then next week we will be talking about that topic that I really wanted to talk about, which is myths about cancer. It's a little teaser.
We'll get there.
All right. Cheers.
Okay, see ya.
That was Dear Science.